I had my children on the floor. I was on my favourite blanket that my grandmother gave me on the floor like a cat.
And I realised in that moment the potential of what our bodies can really do as women.
Like, I could feel his head. I could do my own internal, like, yeah, his head, I could feel it.
I was in tears. I was just in tears and overwhelmed with gratitude.
Hi, and welcome to the Natural Birth Podcast, the podcast that is bringing embodied birth wisdom from women from all over the world sharing their natural birth stories. Don't forget to subscribe and download so that you can always have access to these empowering and positive natural birth stories. Hi, my name is Anna, also known as the Spiritual Midwife, and I am the Natural Birth Podcast host. I'm a midwife and a childbirth educator, and I assist women in optimizing their chances of having an empowering and natural birth experience and a nourishing and healing postpartum. I offer holistic birth preparation and postpartum online courses worldwide for the conscious mama wanting to prepare emotionally, mentally, physically, and spiritually for her birth and for her postpartum. And if you want to know more about me and what I do in the world, then visit me at thenaturalbirthcourse.com. If you had a natural and empowering birth experience that you would like to share with the world, then you can email me at annathespiritualmidwife@gmail.com, and maybe your story will be featured on the Natural Birth Podcast. Now let's dive into today's episode. Today on the Natural Birth Podcast, we have Carrie. Carrie is a mom of five with a wealth of knowledge of the whole range of birth options available to the modern woman. She started out as a young, uninformed woman, choosing the most common option in our modern age, an obstetrician and the medicalized route, being induced and experiencing a range of interventions with her first pregnancies, births, and babies. As she experienced the negative effects of over-medicalized pregnancies and births, she started to educate herself and ended up choosing to radically claim her pregnancy, birth, and her birth space by free birthing her fifth baby. Listen to the journey going from the extremes of the birthing spectrum over medicalization to free birth on today's episode. And if you're curious about Carrie, find her on Insta as Marikai Bumps and Babes. Hi, Carrie, and welcome to the Natural Birth Podcast. How are you today?
Oh, I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm very well.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, such a pleasure to have you, Carrie. I know you had five babies and quite a big gap in between some of them. So you had two babies quite young, and that was more of a medicalized experience. And then you waited about 8 years, and then you had three more, and they were more on the natural side. Right. So today we're going to focus on the three more natural births that you had, but obviously we're going to also cover the first two and the wisdom that you took from those experiences as a 19-year-old with your first.
And
So let's dive on in, Carrie. Let's hear about the short version of your two first births.
Okay, so the short version, standard private hospital birth was the first. So all of the interventions you can possibly receive, I received, which I thought was normal at the time. Being 19, all I'd done was the course that's provided through the hospital, which they just show you all of the different interventions, basically.
That they you do, can get.
So when they all popped up, I thought, oh, yeah, I know this. This is all normal. It all happened, you know, in those classes.
Yeah.
As much as I was against an epidural at the time when they said, you need an epidural. I went, oh, okay, I must need an epidural because this is some sort of medical practice that we're doing here and this has to happen.
Yeah.
So I just accepted everything and had the epidural and then the Vontus and all the things I needed and stitches and this and that. And I still actually remember, because of the epidural, when people started coming in, they started letting, because we had people waiting outside, not invited, but family members, that got wind of me, that I was birthing. So they were all waiting around. And I still remember I hadn't even been up to be cleaned or anything, and I was just laying there, still unable to move, when everybody started walking in and wanting to see the baby, you know.
Oh, God.
And everybody, so there was no skin to skin after, no a couple of hours with just me and baby, nothing. And that really does haunt me to this day, that these people just are walking in and it was kind of, there was just me sprawled out on the bed, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that was number one, just that, you know, standard.
Standard, yeah, because you said to me before that you went private with a private obstetrician and you were booked in for an induction on your due date, because that is standard practice for a lot of private practicing obstetricians. When you go private, it's like you get induced.
Where I was due, it was actually probably about 3 days early when they booked it in, but I think it was because it was before the weekend.
Yes.
The weekend.
Yeah, that's how it works. Yeah. He probably wanted to go and play golf, so he booked you in so you would have your baby so he could have the weekend off.
Right. And he was the obstetrician that delivered me, then delivered my first daughter. So my birth was very similar to mum's birth, because that was the way that it went and that was the way he obviously ran the show.
Yeah.
When I fell pregnant with my second one, which was straight after I stopped breastfeeding my first. So I think I fell pregnant about when she was about 14 months.
Yeah.
And that's when she kind of weaned herself from feeding. Mm. He'd actually passed away, so I didn't get a private obstetrician that time, which may have worked out well for me. So second one was induced as well. That was based on scans saying that she was too small and not growing. So I was induced with the tape. Again, it was the same thing. I just went into like instant contractions, like everything was happening, but my body wasn't doing anything. Baby wasn't doing anything. It was just, you know, those false contractions stimulating that it was going to happen, but it just wasn't happening, you know.
Yeah, that's the risk with those inductions, is that if you're not ready, if your body's not ready, your baby's not ready, it's not going to work, and you're just going to have that failed induction, which is the term for it. And, you know, again, so with this scan business, was your baby too small at the end when she did?
Absolutely not. Nope. Yeah. She was pretty much the same size as the first. Mm. And both me and my husband are quite small framed people. We're very little. So I expected to have that size regardless.
I think this is so important, because like it's becoming an epidemic with the constant ultrasound scans and the finding of problems. And I can't even tell you as a midwife how often I've actually seen women be induced for too small babies or mostly too big babies.
Too big.
Yeah. Usually it's too big babies, and they come out and they're perfect. Perfect. And also another thing, you know, some women actually, they, as you said, you're small. Some women are bigger build. The partner might be really big. They will carry a bigger baby, and they also will be able to birth that bigger baby. And I had one of my friends, she's a midwife, she's had 3 children. They all were on the biggest side. She's quite petite, but she had like 4.5 kilo babies. No problem. Vaginally, naturally, no problem. This is such an epidemic, and people are so scared of having too big babies or too small babies. And the scans are not diagnostic, and they can say, oh, your baby's looking this weight, but they can be wrong with the margin of half a kilo on each side. Like that is
I've even seen it further than that.
Yeah.
And that was my third baby. Oh,
yeah.
Yeah. So and
bloody I've had scans.
All, right. I've had a lot of clients which are first time mums as well. Probably in the last fortnight, I've had about six that have all had inductions due to big babies.
Oh my
God. And one of them was 6 pounds. That was a last week. She's only 3 pounds. Yeah. And she's twice the size of me, you know, height and everything. And so is her husband. And I was like, that's not, you know, yeah. Okay. And then they've had all of these issues after, you know, the baby got stuck, baby was too big, retained placenta, like all of these things that have just gone on and on and on because of this one scan that says your baby's going to be too big. Too big for what?
Mm.
You know,
yeah, it's I actually think it's scary how extremely medicalized it's getting and how there's no reflection. There's
right.
no reflection by these ultrasound technicians connected with the obstetricians making these decisions, women having either inductions or cesareans, and the baby's actually coming out and it's perfectly normal. And they're not going, hey, maybe we're doing a bit too much now. You know, there's right. no reflection on this. It's crazy.
Sure. Right. And I even found over the COVID period, so for pretty much 2020, was huge for cesareans. I don't know why, but we were just getting this string of cesareans and inductions. And I just, and since then, it's kind of, it seems to be getting worse and worse and worse.
Mm. It's the fear-based society, it's the fear-based culture in the hospital, it's the pathologizing pregnancy and birth.
Right.
And it's not, yeah, there's no actual reason. It's getting out of hand.
Right. And it, like when I had my second and I had the induction because of that, that was my second birth, my second induction, and that's all I knew. And all I wanted was just to go into labor naturally. That was my biggest dream, was I just want to feel what it's like to just do it on my own, you know, because it had been taken away from me the first two times. So during that birth, that was different. So that was at the public hospital, but I had been induced. I didn't have any support for that birth. It was all me. I had nobody there to say anything, and even the midwives didn't speak a word. I remember calling to myself, you can do this, when I needed to start pushing because when I got that urge to start to push, because nobody was saying anything. Everybody was standing away mm-hmm. and not saying a word, and I didn't have any family with me. Mm. And I took away from that lack of support. Mm. Which pushed me into learning more about birth and learning more about labor and things like that. So that's what changed me. So I had this big 8-year gap between. So I've had the first two, both induced, and, you know, all of the interventions plus zero support. That's what sort of led me on this path to learn more and more about birth and learn more about what's going on with birth and why this is happening. And that pushed me into birth photography. Mm. So I started doing birth photography, and then I went, oh my God, I need to help these women. Mm. I could not just stand back. And that's what led me to the role of starting to be a doula. I was watching these births and these things happen, and me just having to be like a fly on the wall and go, in my head, I'm like, no, this is not right. This is not right. That woman doesn't need this. That woman, you know, I could just see that people were needing that help or needing that little bit more education going into birth. So they weren't getting what I had, those first two of just, you know, this is what it's supposed to be, but it's not.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So during that gap, I learned a lot. And then my third. So I was pregnant. When I fell pregnant with my third, it was with my second husband. So my first two daughters are with my first husband, and my three children now with my second husband. So we had our first scan and got the, we got really high for Down syndrome. So they were, everyone freaked out. I got this phone call. Oh my God, you, I was 1 in 4 or something. It was really, really high odds. And they said, you need to come in for a, another scan. And when they did another scan, they said, there's all these bits missing. So this is where the scans are so wrong. She doesn't have a stomach. The baby doesn't have this. The baby doesn't have that. There was all of these things that they were saying, you need to terminate.
Whoa.
Yeah. And we ended up getting, they said to me, I sat in the surgery and they said to me, if you don't get a amnio done, your baby will probably die. And I said, well, okay.
That's not connected.
Not at all. Not at all.
So for everyone listening, amniocentesis is that you put a needle into your tummy to take a little sample of the amniotic fluid or other bits and pieces. I'm not, I don't do this myself, so I don't know the ins and outs of it, but it's a test to check further about the baby. So, and this has a risk of miscarriage doing this. And it's just the test. It can't save the baby. And I guess this is the really important thing, you know, Carrie, and I love that we can speak about this. You know, this is so perfect because you have to, it has to be a very conscious decision. And today it's not. It should really be a conscious decision every parent makes. Do I want to have a scan? And if I find out things during that scan, what am I going to do with that? Like, you have to have this conversation with yourself before you even go.
Right.
Because, you know, why are we having scans? You know, will you, if they, as you got this, you know, results that, you know, and they're only a screening tool, they are not diagnostic. We don't know anything until the baby actually is born, you know, for 100%. And sometimes it's very bad results that are totally wrong. And we need to understand this. And also that you have to go inward and go, okay, so if I get a scan and they say it's a high likelihood of some sort of abnormality, there's a likelihood of baby not making it, there's a likelihood of all these different things. What would be your reaction? Would you birth that baby anyways when it's time, like nature wanted it? Or will you do a termination? Are you ready to do a termination? And if your answer is, I would never do a termination, then why have a scan?
You know? Right, exactly.
Yeah. And then there are reasons to have scans, obviously. Sometimes it's, you know, it's really great to have that device, but it shouldn't be used as much as it is today. And it should definitely come with advice beforehand that you are ready to make these decisions and can understand that sometimes it will take you down a path that spirals you into interventions that at the end actually never were necessary.
And that's maybe this baby.
So much anxiety and stress. And I've seen this. I've had other women being told that their babies, A, wouldn't survive or would have to have heart surgery instantly or that thing about not having a tummy. And then the baby is born and there was absolutely zero problems with that baby. So I'm not saying that that is all the time. Of course, sometimes we can pick up things that are amazing. And I'm not saying no to scans, but I'm just saying we need to be more careful and also choose wisely. There is a reason, for example, maybe to do a scan at some point in pregnancy just to check where the placenta is. That could be one thing, but you can actually maybe sometimes find that out anyways through listening to the baby's heart rate and finding the placenta where it's located and all that through doctor, for example. So there's so many different ways. And yeah, just thank you for bringing this up because I think this is such an important topic. I haven't spoken much about this in this podcast and you just brought this up, which is great for all.
I think it's a really important topic too because a lot of the times everybody's just doing the same. We're all doing the same thing. Everybody's doing this scan and all this test or, you know, the diabetes test and this and that. And nobody knows what actually is going to, or they're not learning what's going to happen if it comes back positive, if it comes back negative. Why am I doing this? It's just like standardized testing that's not appropriate for everybody and does put this fear into people. And that's exactly what it did to me.
Yeah.
All of a sudden I'm going to, you know, I have high for Down syndrome. And then if I don't do this test, my baby could die anyway, or it's going to die shortly after birth and all of this sort of thing. So I had the test done, which put me at risk of losing my baby in the first place. And you know, and it was stressful because we were moving at the time. We'd just bought a house, and there was a few other things. But this, you know, we'd sort of not actively started trying, but we weren't. We were happy when it happened, and it had taken probably about 3 years of us just kind of not caring if we fell, and it just happened when it happened. So we kind of went, this is perfect. Everything's working the way it's supposed to. And then we have these doctors that were going, oh my God, this is going to happen and that's going to happen. And it really sort of ruined that for us. So we were put, because we were so high risk, we were put through the medical fetal unit. So we were getting scans again all the time. And then they were saying, okay, so 1 minute she's got a stomach, the next minute she doesn't. Then all of a sudden her arms are really small or her legs are really small and she's could have heart conditions and all of those sorts of things. However, when I got towards the end of that pregnancy, I was sort of at a point where I just thought, I'm kind of done with this. And I rang up the hospital and said, I'd like to go to my local hospital, because I had to travel an extra 35 minutes to get to this other hospital where they said I had to go because I was so high risk. And I got to a point where I said, I don't want to do this anymore. And I rang them up and I said, I want to go and birth at my local hospital. And they said, okay. And I thought, well, that's really weird because I was so high risk. Now I'm allowed there. And I rang the hospital and my local and said, yep, I've just been cleared. I can come and birth with you. And they said, no, no, you can't come and birth here. You were too high risk. You need to stay over there. So I got really upset and I said to my husband, I'm just going to stay home. And, of course, he wasn't ready for that. I'd done a lot of research, but he hadn't. And he's like, no, you have to go to the hospital. But I stayed home as long as I possibly could for her. We did the mad dash and about 15 minutes later she was born. Wow. So we only just made it to the hospital, but I was just at that point where I'd had enough. Mm. I'd had enough of this stress. Every time I went there, there was something else going on, you know. And when she was born, perfect weight, she was 7 pound 11, which was the biggest for me at that point. Labor was super easy. It was, I swear, I think I pushed once. And then I just had fetal ejection reflex. She just poof, did her own thing.
Yeah.
And everything was absolutely perfect.
Yeah.
Until we got to placenta. And then that was all the issues. So I had the injection to birth the placenta. That wasn't coming away, but it was so quickly, you know. I literally just finished birthing her and I was holding her for 2 seconds and they were already trying to get it out.
Yeah.
And then saying, it's not coming out, it's not coming out, you know. And then I had all these people in pushing and prodding and, oh, it was terrible. And that pain was really, really bad. And I remember looking at her, at the nurse's glasses, I could see my reflection because they had the light down on me and I could see my reflection and she was sort of digging around trying to get this placenta out. And it was so painful and I couldn't enjoy that moment with my newborn because they were just pushing on me and all of that sort of stuff. And I got to a point by then where I'd done enough research. I said to my husband, that's it. If we have any more children, I'm not coming in here at all.
Yeah.
At all. Yeah. And then we moved on to the next and that's where it all started. So I was going to have a private midwife.
During this time, you were studying to become a doula as well fourth. Yeah. Yeah. Yep. So you dive deeply into birth realm and.
Definitely. And my husband and his family, they aren't sort of, they weren't doing that kind of research and they weren't into that sort of side of things. They're a very medicalized family, you know. And I even sat and spoke to his grandmother once about birth because I was starting to really get into it. And she said, you know, back when it was my day, they would, you'd go in to to the hospital, and she said, and they used to make you shave and then they'd dead hole everything, and everybody would leave and nobody would see anyone until after the baby was born, and then they'd scrub you again with the dead hole. And I was like, oh my God, that sounds horrendous.
Yeah.
So I did listen to a lot of the stories from the other generations as well, which I went, what, when did we get like this? How did this even happen? So yeah, and my mum, and they're very medicalized too, so they trust doctors a lot, and there's always medical issues, you know, so they always were ringing doctors for this or that, or someone has a cough, run to the hospital. So it was very, everybody kind of looked at me and went, what is going on with her? when I stepped out of the norm and sort of started doing that bit of research and diving into everything and learning so much. So when I decided that I was going to birth at home, I did start getting those reactions of, oh, why are you doing that? You're very brave. I'm like, well, I'm not actually very brave, because I don't feel like that. I feel like everybody else. I think you're very brave going into the hospital these days. and I started to get some negative, especially over the cost. Because I was buying things, you know, for my birth and going to have the private midwife. So at that stage, it was just a home birth. Why won't you just go to the hospital? That's what I kept getting. Why aren't you just doing that? And it's like, well, because I don't want to, though. And I did a big post on Facebook to just cover everybody and kind of went, you know, this is my choice.
Yeah.
This is why I'm doing this. I have all these. And so my older kids now, and I've got a stepson as well. So we had 14-year-old, 15-year-old, 13-year-old, and they all wanted to be involved. So I had all daughters at the time. So I had four daughters. And my stepson, and everybody wanted to get involved and everybody wanted to be there. And I really wanted to do this to change their generation, to change their births. I've got four children that are going to be birthing, plus a stepson who's going to have, hopefully one day, he may have children himself. And I wanted them to learn that it's not how it has to be at hospitals. It's not how, you know, inductions and all these different things. So they've been learning with me because I've been doing all the teaching with them as well.
Mm.
Oh, hang on. Someone needs a feed. I'm just going to grab him.
So we just have little Tide, the newest little baby, with us breastfeeding. So if you hear any noises, that is a little Tide. I'm going to get back to the story though. So we're talking about your fourth birth now.
Yeah. So, yeah, I did get a lot of, I don't want to say backlash, but I just got a lot of questions, but they weren't really questions. It was more statements from people. I don't think they wanted to know the answer.
No, because they have their own opinion about things and they just want to be right. Yeah, that's
right. Yeah, and so, well, she ended up having to be a hospital birth anyway because we were moving house at the time and hubby hadn't really, he still wasn't comfortable, which was still putting that bit of fear into my mind.
Yeah.
I thought I'm not ready yet, and I don't think he, because he was ready, and because everybody else was kind of putting stuff into his mind, which was then putting it into my mind. So she ended up being hospital birth as well, but it was really simple. It was 40 minutes. I was in labor for, I think, and everything was fine. And I was like, all right, get me out of here. So I hadn't, the only baby that I'd actually stayed in hospital with was the first, and the rest I left within hours.
Okay, cool. So do you want to talk us through a little bit about, you know, the early signs of labor approaching for you with your babies? And because the first ones were inductions, so obviously you wouldn't know then, but the other two that we've just covered a little bit about, how did you go into labor? What was the signs for you when you did naturally go into labor?
So I had, with baby number three, I had small trickles of waters. So they were just little bits. And I was like, what is going on? Because I'd never done anything naturally. I thought, I don't really know what's happening right now. And I just kind of left it. I tend to start to get contractions with no other sort of warning at the start. It's just like I go about my normal day and then all of a sudden I sort of get little tiny niggles here and there, and then they start to build up. So I didn't get any of those signs that everybody sort of questions and, oh, you know, am I sick or I get diarrhea or I get this or I get that. I got nothing at all. It was just normal and then I'm going to have a baby. And I think because I wasn't looking for signs either, because I didn't know what my body would do, I wasn't questioning everything that was happening.
Yeah.
So I was really whatever is whatever, you know. So when my waters were trickling, I still didn't even care about that. I was like, oh, okay, well, it might be that. It might not be. I don't know. We'll see.
Did you have to put a pad on or?
Yeah, yep. So I put a pad on. Bounced around on a ball for a little bit. That was with baby number three. And then when my contractions start to really intensify, I just sort of hang out in the shower and rock around in there for a little bit. But,
and how long I think, was it? How long was your
third? So third, 2 hours.
From the first contraction?
Yeah.
Wow, that's fast.
Yeah, very fast. And then my fourth, yeah, she was 46 minutes from start to finish. Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about that one. So you had a little niggle and then 45 minutes later, all of a sudden you have a baby. So talk us through that. How did you even know that it was, you know, so if it starts very gentle, like you wouldn't have had many contractions before you actually had a baby. So when did you really need to go to hospital?
So with her, it was basically as soon as I got that first niggle, I said, this is it. I'm in labor, because I don't normally, I get the tight and regular tightening, like your Brinks and Hinks. I get those. But there's a significant difference. They're just sort of tightenings, but you can kind of feel. So the first, I had 3 contractions in bed, and then I woke him up and said, I'm in labor. And we knew exactly how long it took to the hospital, so we just got straight in the car and left. And then she was born.
So how long were you from the hospital? How long, far away?
11 minutes.
Okay, so you literally came in and like had maybe half an hour or 20 minutes in there and
had so they put the monitors on straight away and said that her heart rate wasn't very good and they needed to put the scalp monitors on, which in turn broke my waters when they put the clip on, and then she was just straight out.
Right. Did they have time to put the clip on?
They only just got it on, but they got it on wrong because she was, her head was, oh, she had a hand on her head and it was like that. So it was like one was here and one was here.
Probably just had cord compression. Like, gosh, that baby had no time to like go through the birth canal. It was just like really fast birth and surely if they were in there supposedly doing the scalp electrode, they would feel that you were probably fully dilated and the head was just there and you're gonna have a baby.
Right.
Oh well.
So but it was really simple, it was really easy, and I think that was because I did not leave home. You know, I did everything at home and then we just left. And then when we got to the hospital, it was happening straight away. So I didn't have any time for anything else to go wrong, I suppose. Not wrong, but, you know.
Yeah. And how did you end up birthing your babies, the ones later on? What position did you use?
All of them was over the, like on my knees over the bed head.
Right.
Beautiful. Yeah. So my second was the start of that, because that was the position I did. So because no one told me what to do. I just did it.
Mm.
So then I thought that must be how I birthed. So the others were the same. I just instantly went into that position.
Yeah.
So then when I fell pregnant with Tide, and I really wanted my home birth last time and I didn't get it, I was so set. I'm like, that is it. I'm having home birth. No one's going to stop me. Don't even talk to me about it.
Yeah.
And we organized a midwife and she came down and said, she did our first interview and she was like, yep, everything was great. But then when we discussed time frames of last baby, she was like an hour and a half, nearly 2 hours from my house.
Yeah.
She went, I don't know if I'm going to make it.
Yeah.
Okay. And then I said, it's all good. I'll ring up the, we only have the one publicly funded home birthing program here. So I rung them. It was a no-go from them. I was too far out of their range, like their, they wouldn't travel to me. And so I was really, really disappointed.
Mm.
And it was at that point that me and my husband talked and I hired a doula. So she was actually from Melbourne. So she's my birth photographer and doula. And here I am in New South Wales and I hired her. And we had a talk with her and I ended up saying to my husband, I think we're going to end up just doing this on our own anyway, so let's prepare for that.
Mm.
And so we decided, we went, okay, well, let's just free birth. And that's where it all began. So we decided at that point we were going to free birth and we decided at that point, what do we do in any event? What do we do about this test? What do we do about that test? And what do we do about this scan? So that's when we sit, and this is what you were talking about earlier. Every time we sat down and went, okay, so we have to think about this.
Mm.
Like, let's say the diabetes test. We did our research. I got him to do the research. Mm-hmm. We talked about what would happen if I did have it, if I didn't have it. Do I need to do the test? And that's where we went, nah, we don't need that. So we didn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was the GBS swab. How does that work? So it was really good because I knew a lot of it, but I got him to do the research as well because he was invested in the free birth as well and the wild pregnancy. Mm. And then it kind of got all of his family talking about it as well because his cousin's pregnant was pregnant at the same time as us. So the babies, we both had boys 10 days apart.
Mm.
So we were always having conversations about everything that was going on. And she would say, oh, when are you doing this? And I'm like, I'm not doing that. And I go, why? And that was when we'd go, well, this is what happens if you do have it or if you don't have it. Or so we've decided that we don't need to do that test. I don't have high risk for that, or I don't have, you know, it's not going to change our mind regardless. So we just didn't do anything, which made it so good.
Do you want a natural birth, Mama? Then the natural birth course might be for you. Do you see birth as a rite of passage and an important and transformational event that you'd like to feel fully empowered in meeting? Are you, like many other women, realizing that it is time to take back your power as a birthing woman in the birth space and birth your baby your way? Would you like to feel calm and confident as you birth your baby with all the tools you need in order to meet the labor sensations naturally and be ready body, mind, and soul? Do you deeply down know that your body was made to birth your baby and that you have all the inherent power and inner wisdom to do so? Are you looking for holistic midwifery wisdom and guidance to assist you and give you all the evidence-based information you need in order to feel fully sovereign in your decision-making around your pregnancy and upcoming birth? Then the Natural Birth Course is for you. Find out more at thenaturalbirthcourse.com.
the entire pregnancy, and it was a tough pregnancy. I had so much pressure and, you know, I've had 5 other babies before. My body was like, oh, you're so done with this. But it was super smooth. I never had one bit of fear, one bit of, you know, stress or worry or anything. It was just amazing. And every time something, occasionally I'd go, oh, I've got a little bit of a pain here, or how about you go? Are you okay? And I'm like, yeah, I'm fine. He's like, do you need to get checked? I'm like, nope. I know. I'm fine. And then he started learning a little bit about baby mapping and all sorts of stuff. So it was really cool. And he talked to all of his friends about it. And they were, and he's in a football team as well too. So it was very weird that he would come up with these things and start talking about them. But yeah, he started learning about the cervix checks and VEs and all of these sorts of things. And he could say how dilated somebody was and all that sort of stuff. And it was really cool to watch. Then he questioned things. And it was really, really cool. Like every now and then someone would say something and he'd go, but that's not how, that's not right. You know, why? She doesn't need that. Here we go. Here we go. He'd go, now that she's going to get interventions. Now she's going to be induced. I'm like, oh my God, listen to my husband. coming from someone who was, you know, you go to hospital, you have a baby in hospital and that's the way it is. We don't talk about it. Even, even his father wasn't there for his birth or for his sister's births. They wait outside and he's still very much like that now. So it was really cool to see people's minds start to change and
massive and healing. Massive reclaiming of the birth space.
That's right. So I didn't do any of the tests during the pregnancy. We ended up not going with the midwife and just going with my doula birth photographer. And everything was running super smooth. She drove up and we got a little caravan. So she stayed in the caravan. So the plan was she'd stay for 2 weeks. And I would have a baby somewhere in between there, you know. I had everything set up. We got, we did a little bit of a medical emergency booklet, which we printed out. Hubby sat down and read it all. So he knew exactly what would happen if anything, you know, wasn't going very well. Or what we needed to do, resus, all those sorts of things. Then, so we printed out pretty much everything. I think there was about 13 different things like cord prolapse, hemorrhaging, baby resus, a few of those things. And then we had a talk and we decided that we wouldn't read into things that didn't look like they would be a risk for us. So we didn't have that bit of fear that certain things could go wrong when they didn't, it didn't really mean anything for us particularly. Like the cord prolapse, we kind of looked at that and went, is that really a risk for us? No, not really. So we kind of put that to the side. So the only thing we really kind of worried about was, not worried, but that we needed to have knowledge on was hemorrhaging and then just baby resus. That was it. Everything else we went, I'm not really worried about it. Size, I'm not too concerned. All of my babies have been pretty average size. I've birthed them, no issues. So there was no worry of any of that sort of stuff, getting stuck or anything. I had people ask and I go, well, it's not really a concern for me. So we really only prepared for things that may have related to me personally. And one of those things was the hemorrhaging, because everybody says after so many children, you have a higher risk of hemorrhaging or whatever. So we made sure we looked into it. So we get to the day of the birth. This is really important. So it was my due date on the Monday and this was on the Sunday. Hubby played football. I went to the football. I thought I was going into labor. I kind of knew. My body just kind of, I don't know. There was something that day where I just went, it's time. It's happening. It's going to happen. So my doula had gone back home at that point.
What?
Because she'd had another birth and she said, I'm going to fly back up. And we were getting a backup and all these things were going on. And we got to a point where we were like, it's just us. It's just going to be us two because everything's sort of going wrong at this point. Mm. She had to fly back. She had to go back home for another birth and all these other things. So he still went to football. Everything was normal. I sat and watched him play football. We came home and she rung me and said, I'm going to fly back up. How do you feel? And I said, I'm fine if you don't come, if you don't make it back. But, cool. If you want to fly back, fly back. So she flew back, just turned up in time. but she flew back. So I started getting mild contractions. So at this stage, we had baby mapped and Bub was posterior. I could feel everything. So I had my placenta was at the front. He was spot on spine at that point and hadn't moved for a few weeks. And he wasn't, he was low, but not extremely low. And hubby actually done he was doing checks on me. I would have done them myself, but I can never reach.
Yeah.
So he'd learned and he'd been doing checks every now and then. So he done a check and he said to me, everything's really good. He said, your cervix feels really soft. I'm like, oh, okay. he said that he'd actually felt Bub's head. And he said he could feel the pulsating as well. And he said, so I'm not going to do any more checks. And I said, okay, that's great because I don't really want you to do any more anyway. But so we knew at that point that he was posterior. And I'd had a dream that it was going to be a really tough labor for me. And I don't know. I had a dream of when he was born and that it took me a really long time. And it was really quite painful. and I'd had several of these dreams prior and I'd never had dreams before about birthing babies or anything like that. But I'd never been really in tune with myself. It was the same as not knowing things were traumatic until you later learned that it didn't have to be like that. It was the same as I'd never listened to myself because I'd always had outsourced that power, I suppose, and allowed everybody else to tell me whether I was sick or whether I was dilating or whether I was this or whether I was that. Mm. So it was really interesting to have that opportunity to listen to myself and be so in tune with myself that I knew things were happening and and I understood it and I accepted it and I was okay with it. Mm. It was so different. I can't even describe how amazing it is to feel that rather than allowing someone to tell you how you're supposed to feel or how you should be feeling or how things should be going. Mm. So I'd had a couple of dreams and I did try hypnobirthing and that side of things, but I just didn't work for me. I always, every time I'd try to relax, something was itchy. You know, my knee was itchy or I'd have to move or something.
Yeah.
When I first started writing my birth plan and talking to my doula, I had this thing of birth should be quiet and I should have beautiful music playing and oils burning and little lights and all of these things that I'd seen on birth videos before, you know, and on which have been so amazing. And I thought they're so beautiful and I want this birth that's going to be like that. And there was this moment where I had this dream and I woke up from the dream and I went, wow, this is crazy. My birth was not that. The vision that I had of what a birth should have been like was not the dream that I had. And the dream that I had all of my kids were running around. I had one diving into the birth pool, and we had music playing that was just like, you know, pop music, and people were dancing. And I rung her up and I said to her, I had this vision and I had this dream and this of what my birth should have been like. And when I had this dream, it was completely opposite. And I said, and if I didn't, and we talked about it, and all of these values and beliefs that I had in birth weren't even mine. They were I'd got away from the medical side of things and learned, but then I thought that birth was supposed to be another way. And I'm really glad that I dealt with this prior to my birth because I wouldn't have been okay when, you know, the kids were fighting in the background and one was diving into the pool and it wasn't quiet and peaceful like it was supposed to be. So we discussed it and we talked about it, and then that's when I realized that I was adopting other people's births into my own or my ideas of birth, and I'd just moved from medical to home but not myself. And it was that moment that I all of a sudden got in tune with myself. So then we thought of a new birth plan, and it involved chaos and and the kids being loud and noisy and the dogs running around and different music, and it was all okay, you know, and I was fine with that, which changed everything, because it was in that moment that I went, I have to plan this for myself and I have to do this the way that I should do this, not the way that I thought home birth should be, but how my birth needs to be. And that was when I got really in tune with myself and started to accept different things, and that's when I started to feel different things. So when I did go into labor, I started listening to myself and going, okay, I'm going to do this now and I'm going to do that now. And I even building up to the birth, I had, you know, people had TENS machines, they had the yoga balls, they had all of these different things. So I got everything. I got every single little thing. And I had the pool and I had everything, and I thought, I'm going to use this and I'm going to do that. And then when it came time, I listened to myself and I didn't need any of those things. I didn't use half of the things that I had purchased or had sitting there thinking this is how the birth's going to go, because I had to listen to me and me was saying something completely different. So I had a few contractions. I popped on the TENS machine and laid in bed. So this was at 2 or 3:30 in the morning. By about 6:30 in the morning, I'd said to hubby, I need to get up. I couldn't sleep through them at that point. We did no timing. We did nothing like that. It was just whatever happens, happens. So we jumped out. We started filling up the pool. And I jumped in there for a little bit, and the kids sort of started all coming in by that stage. And I couldn't handle it in there. I really didn't like it in the bath, in the water. I loved the showers but not the bath. So I jumped back out of there. And I could feel that I really needed him to move down, but I couldn't get him to move down. So I was doing all these weird positions that I'd never even thought of or heard of, but my body and my mind were saying, this is what you need to do. It's so amazing how things take over when you haven't got someone telling you things, you know, when all of a sudden it's just you, and you've got to listen to what you need. So I kind of walked around a bit and went, I need to get him down. I need to get him down. And hubby was like, what's wrong? And I'm like, there's nothing wrong. I just need to get him down. I can feel it, the position that he's in, and I could feel he wasn't where he needed to be. And so I jumped in the shower for a bit, and I was kind of in and out the shower rocking, and then I was on the ground and sort of back up. And so this was by about 9 o'clock in the morning. And it was really tough, you know. I said, he's not going to be here for another 2 hours because I can't move him down. And I was starting to get very frustrated. There was no fear. There was no worry. I didn't think he was stuck. I didn't think anything like that. but I knew he wasn't where he needed to be and I couldn't get him there. And that was really frustrating to me. So I started trying other positions and then I just accepted that he'll get where he needs to be when he needs to be there, however many hours that takes. And when I had that moment of it relax, I suppose, and went, I don't need to keep working so hard for this. That was when he'd done his thing and I almost felt a pop.
Yeah.
And I went, he turned. I just felt him turn. And I even said, I reckon he's like Edward Scissorhands. I can feel scratching. And he came out with the longest nails I've ever seen in my life. Yeah. They were out to here, you know.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But I could feel every single bit. And I was so happy that I could feel everything that I wasn't upset. I wasn't scared. And don't get me wrong, it wasn't one of those births where I wasn't in pain, because there was a hell of a lot of pain. He was a really tough baby to get there. But I loved every second of it. And it was the first time in my entire life that I had listened to my own body and listened to myself and knew what was going on and had all of this power. So it was really, really amazing. My youngest, so she's 22 months, was with me every step of the way. Everywhere I looked, she was like this, looking. She loved it. And it was so cool because everybody was just normal. You know, I had one teenager on the phone in the background, you know, texting and playing games and whatever else while I'm absolutely roaring at the top of my lungs. And I've got another one making up fruit platters in the other room, and everybody was so casual about everything. Even though what everyone thought was going to be a scary moment, or that you had to have hospital, you know, and needed to have all these medical stuff for, we didn't need anything. So, yeah, it was really cool. So after I was in and out of the shower for a bit, I was on the floor and hubby said to me, I knew you wouldn't stay in that bath. And he told me I wasn't allowed to go near the lounge because it's a brand new lounge. And here I was bent over the lounge at this point in my normal regular birthing position. And he said, I knew it was time at that point because you got in that position yourself. So I had all of the kids around me. I was over the back of the lounge and I had all of my children lined up in the background, so five of them, plus my sister-in-law and my mum.
Wow.
And then my doula and birth photographer was kind of over the other side. And one of them had a mirror. They were all huddled together. It was just amazing. So when I started to push, I didn't get the ejection reflex this time, which I had with the others. So I was really needing to push. And with all the others, there was those moments where I would be pushing or I'd be doing something and then the nurse would say, okay, now just don't push this time, or just breathe, or, you know, just pant or little breaths. So it was really cool to feel that for myself and know when I needed to do something.
Yeah.
So I was doing some big pushing and some big breaths, and then all of a sudden I knew I couldn't push for a couple. I needed to just wait. So I was just doing little panting, and he was just doing his thing. He's decided that he might have a little bit more and have a bit of a grunt. Yeah, so when I was pushing, it kind of was taking a bit of time. And there was a couple of times where hubby went, are you okay? I said, yeah, I'm fine. And, yeah, so once his head came out, my sister-in-law, she's a really anxious person and really nervous. And she didn't get involved with all of the process of learning as much. So once his head was out, he still had the bag, yeah, and still waters.
Beautiful.
yeah, so I was like, yes, this is amazing. but I couldn't move my position. And I had to stay where I was because I just couldn't move. And I remember I could hear someone in the background going, is that okay? Because, you know, his colour wasn't amazing, which it's not. They're not beautiful and pink when they're like this. and it was hubby who couldn't even see him. I looked at his face and he went, everything's fine. And I was like, wow, this is cool. So she actually sort of leant down to get him as he sort of come out.
Your sister-in-law?
My sister-in-law, yeah. All of the kids wanted to, but they didn't know what to do. They were like, do I get in there? Do I not? So she'd sort of grabbed him. And when she grabbed him, I felt a little bit of a pull. He wants to jump back on. Hang on.
Yeah.
I felt a little bit of a pull and I said, don't move him. I had the shortest cord in history.
Oh, my goodness.
So I couldn't actually move him from where he was or it would pull on the cord too much. So I had to hold him there for, it wasn't even 10 minutes. And the placenta started to come away itself. And that was another thing that we discussed prior was, well, what happens if you don't have the injection, you know? Does the placenta come out? And I said to my husband, of course it does. It's got to come out. So it was interesting when that happened because I said, okay, don't pull any further. And she just sat him down in between my legs. And I've got photos of all this and video. And there was a lot of blood, a lot. And I just went, oh, that's a lot of blood there. And I looked at hubby and he went, there's a lot of blood and it was all over the floor. And he said, how do you feel? I said, I feel okay. And I went, I look okay. I feel all right. I'm fine. And he said, all right, well, you're not hemorrhaging then. I went, okay. So we both just went, just check ourselves. I feel all right. I don't feel like I'm going to pass out or anything. Everything's fine. So I let him just lay there for a moment. And it was only about 10 minutes or so. And the placenta was sitting pretty much right there. So I just stood up and laid onto the lounge. And the placenta just came away perfectly. Out it came. And it wasn't even 15 minutes after birth and I had the placenta out sitting there. I didn't need anything. I didn't need injections. I didn't need that. You know, I didn't need anything. Everything just came. I didn't have anyone pushing on me or pulling on the cord or anything like that, which was really good because everything just went super smooth. And it was really good to check myself and not have someone go, oh, that's a lot of blood. There's an issue. It was, there's a bit of blood there. Let's just double check if anything's going on. So I just had to feel myself. How do I feel in myself? I felt fine. So I went, that must be normal.
Did you continue to bleed?
Yeah, a lot. And I just kept asking myself, how do I feel? Am I okay? Am I dizzy? Am I lightheaded? Nope. I'm fine. It's normal then. I said to hubby later on, I said to him, I think it seems like a lot of blood too because at hospitals they're constantly cleaning everything. Everything's moved. You know, they take out a pad and they move it and they throw it in the bin or whatever, where we just let it all go. And so, I mean, there was a fair amount of blood, but all I had to do was just kept thinking, checking myself, am I okay? How do I feel? I feel fine, then I'm not concerned. And that's what we discussed prior to why would I transfer? Why would I need to go to a hospital? And we discussed it and I said to him, I will only go once I've looked at myself and if in myself there is a worry, I want nobody else to tell me that I need to transfer. So we discussed that and it was never, no one was ever allowed to say anything to me about that's, you know, you, I think you need to go to a hospital. So it was always, how do I feel? Do I need to go somewhere? Do I need to move? No, it was all just whatever I do, whatever I want was how it was going to go. So it was, everyone had to rely on me, which was really good because that meant I relied on myself, and that was when I listened to myself. So then we just, baby was on me and all the kids came around and they were, we had a little tie to do the cord and all the kids got involved with that and they did the tie off and and then we just ate. we all ate food and laid around and everyone had a big cry, and it was probably about an hour or two later I jumped in the pool. We finally used that and we had a little bath, me and my littlest girls jumped in the bath and we had a little bath together. The kids never once, everybody said to me, oh, the kids are going to get in the way of things. The kids are going to, you know, what happens if they get scared? What happens if this? My kids never once had one bit of fear, even the little ones. I was carrying around, it was so much easier for me when I was having contractions to pick up my littlest one and carry her around with me or do something with her. Like I said, she was in every single photo, she is right there looking.
Yeah.
It was so normal for her. It was so normal for all of them that nobody ever was worried about anything at all. Mm. And we were sort of on a high for a couple of days, that's for sure. Afterwards, the kids asked questions every now and then. They'd go, oh, was that okay? Or was that a lot of blood? Or, but during the whole process, nobody ever questioned anything. You know, it was all just perfect.
Yeah.
And even afterwards, it was still perfect. There was, I think it was about 5 days before I got up and left the house or done anything. And I actually went into day three, I jumped in the shower and I had a large clot come out. And then I had a prolapse. So first I thought, that's not right. There's something there. I hope that's not a bit of placenta or something, because it was quite hard. And I got hubby to go and get me a mirror. He came in and I had a look. And I'm not, but like I said, before this birth, all of our families are very medicalized. So there was never a time where we would ever self-diagnose anything, anything at all. So, and I had a look and I thought, it's okay. It's just a prolapse. I know what's happening here. And it wasn't, you know, it was only minor. It wasn't extremely bad. Mum's going, you need to go to hospital. I'm like, no, I'm fine. So I just laid down for a little while, done a bit of research and went, okay, I know what I've got to do. And it's resolved itself anyway. But even in then, it's something I would normally race to a hospital for, and I didn't. I was like, now that I know that I can do things on my own and listen to my own body, my body is fully capable of all of these things. Mm. It has changed everything. It has changed how I parent. It's changed my children, how they trust themselves now. It's a huge thing. It's really life-changing.
Beautiful. So when you just going back to the birth, when you were when you were birthing and then you had a bit of a gush or a bit of a bleed happening there, did you have any, had you planned for that? So you had any kind of remedies or did you do something to
So with the printout that we had all those, you know, things that could go wrong or happen. Hubby had already read through that. So he was like, okay, so I just got to get a little bit of placenta and put it into your cheek. And we'd also purchased some tinctures from Blissful Herbs, which was, there was one, like a no bleed, one for that. So we just instantly got that. I had that anyway, just to make sure. So I had a couple of drops of that. And he was prepared to put a little bit of placenta into my cheek if I felt that we needed to do that, but we didn't. I didn't think we needed to.
And did your baby go skin to skin and have a breastfeed?
Yeah, instantly. We were straight on. And he was really good with the feed too. I actually allowed him to do the crawl up.
And at that point, did you, because you said, you know, you kept on checking that you weren't feeling dizzy and all of that. So at any point, did you feel at any point that you were losing too much?
No, there was, I was straight after, I was a little bit lightheaded and I've never been that lightheaded, but I just went, am I okay? Yeah, I'm okay. Like I just had to, sometimes I would go, and even during the labor itself, every now and then I would sort of come away from myself a bit. And all I needed was just to go back into my own mind and go, are you okay? This is okay. And then move on from there. Normally, if I went, I need help, or am I okay? If somebody was there to answer me, I would then trust them and not listen to myself. But because everybody had been told, you need to throw it back onto me.
Yeah.
So that was planned prior. We did talk about that because I do. It's something that I do. I kind of look for answers from other people. It was good to be able to pull back to myself and go, no, yes, I'm the only one that can answer this. Am I okay?
Kerry, if you had a first-time mama in front of you right now who's about to have her first baby and she really wants to have a natural and empowering birth experience, what advice and pearls of wisdom would you give to her?
Probably what we discussed earlier, if you're going to have anything, any form of testing or anything's going to go on, learn what you would decide to do from that. So I think it starts in pregnancy. Trust yourself. Trust yourself 100%. You have got this. And when people start to doubt you, that's when you start to doubt yourself. So, you know, make decisions in your own mind. Anyone is capable of this. You don't have to be super strong or brave or all the things that people say that you are. You just have to be a woman. You can do it. So I think definitely decide and look at both options for everything, and that when you start to trust yourself, things work the way they're supposed to work.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Kerry, for coming on the podcast. It's been a pleasure hearing your story.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening. If you love this podcast, then please share it. Grade it on iTunes and leave a comment. If you want to connect on social media, you can find me on Facebook as The Spiritual Midwife or on Instagram as the_spiritual_midwife. Thank you for listening.